Ladies and gentlemen, it is, what is it, Sunday? Christmas season? And I guess you could say that North Texas kind of unwrapped their presents already because they got a nice recruiting class, the number one recruiting class in the conference. I mean, you know, this is all based on 24/7's ratings, and I think some others had them a little lower. Some others had these guys just a little bit ranked with a fewer stars. None of that really matters. I think the staff is very excited about the players they got, and I think we're all excited because we, you know, the players they got. I think 24/7 has like 22 of them of the 23 at 3 stars. I think Rivals has them fewer, but whatever. On this podcast today, friend of the show, Billy Sierra, to talk with us a little bit about recruiting. How are you doing this fine Sunday morning, Billy?
I'm doing really good. It's the 23rd, and I don't have to do any Christmas shopping anymore, which is a change of pace from what I'm normally doing. So I'm feeling pretty good right now.
I think we're going to go Christmas shopping later on today. So I'm going to go fight the hordes of people. I'm ready. I'm going to go steal myself and get some armor, some medieval armor. It's going to be great. So just your initial one sentence impression of this class.
One sentence, I would say, this class finally gave us the foundation for really having an elite Conference USA roster going forward that we haven't had before. And what I mean by that is just that this class in and of itself is not going to be enough to just come out and wreck shop in Conference USA if the next few classes are duds. But like I said, it serves as the foundation, because if you can put together two or three more classes like this, then you'll probably, given the way that the coaching staff has performed, if it's the same coaching staff, you're probably going to be having at least a season or two where you're pushing for, you know, maybe an undefeated Conference USA season, maybe a great start where you have a chance at getting some top 25 votes, maybe getting in the top 25. And that might sound a little bit ridiculous when you think about, you know, where the class is ranked. The class is ranked, I think, in the 60s overall in the nation, in the low 60s. And then I think Rivals actually had them even in the 50s. So that might sound like, oh, they're in the 50s, and why are they going to be, how could they be a top 25 team? You know, this is a comparable class to what a lot of the top G5 schools have gotten that have kind of led up to those kind of seasons. Think of a few years ago, Western Michigan in the PJ Fleck era. This is the kind of class that they were getting that eventually led up to their 13-0 season where they played Wisconsin in the Cotton Bowl. And, you know, that's, if we can keep it up, you know, hopefully that's the goal, is to have kind of seasons like that. Obviously UCF, I mean. So, you know, I just think it's a good foundation, because the classes that we've signed before have, even under Luttrell, have not been necessarily great. They've been good enough. He's gotten, the biggest thing is that he got a really good quarterback, which has kind of accelerated the winning at UMT. But the classes as a whole have not been just these stellar, outstanding classes. This class was outstanding in every aspect that you could evaluate it based on.
Yeah, I mean,
is that one sentence?
That was one long run on sentence, I think, but no, that was good. That was good. All right, I guess put into context for the rest, you know, everything else. Like people, there's a lot of people that are even worse than me. I follow recruiting because I kind of have to, but I'm not super interested in the day to day, like player by player. What did this guy say? Where did he visit? And I think it's useful, at least for me, because it kind of gives me just like an overall view, and I'm not too much looking at the details. But there are people even worse than me that are like, they only pay attention day of recruiting time. So you mentioned that North Texas hasn't had these great recruiting classes. What's been not great about them?
So the way that I choose to evaluate recruiting classes is I've always looked at the offer list of the players, and to me, that's the best indicator. Sometimes, and I've talked about this with Adam before, But sometimes you get players. We've had players in the past who have gotten 3-star ratings and fans have gotten excited about. But in reality, we were their only offer. So it was either us or those guys were playing, you know, FCS or Division II ball. So, you know, the 3-star ratings can be somewhat deceiving at times. And then more often than not, those guys did not amount to much in North Texas. So, like I said, I like to look at it based on offer lists. And not only does it kind of show that, yeah, a lot of multiple FBS coaches thought that this guy could play on the FBS level. Not only does it show that, it also shows that how well our staff is doing recruiting and how well our staff is able to get guys that other schools wanted. And, you know, during the McCartney era, if you look at the classes that kind of were the upperclassmen during the, you know, the 2015 season and even the 2014 season, there was a bunch of guys who chose North Texas over nobody else. And, you know, I've talked about that a little bit as far as like, I have a letter grade scale, but basically it was a bunch of, like I said, it was a bunch of guys who we were their only choice. And, you know, you're going to hit on some of those. For example, one of those guys was Carlos Harris. He didn't have any other offers and he became a really, really productive FBS player. But for every Carlos Harris, there's about 5 to 6 guys who either couldn't get off the bench or who were starting, but more out of necessity and not having any other players capable. And those guys were below Conference USA level caliber starters. So, you know, this class had so many, the offer list of these guys they're ridiculous. I mean, we had way more offers combined in this group than we've ever had since I've been following recruiting. Since, you know, I tracked it back in 2011 as best as I could, and just the amount of offers was, this group probably had about 40 more offers than any other class that's been signed since 2011. So 40 more FBS offers. So you know that's about, you know, basically 2 offers per player. And you know, it's a group that, like I said, they're very much consensus FBS level recruits and players. So I think that's going to do big things for our roster, because we might have some spots where we might not have the best caliber guys. So these guys will kind of come in there and give a big talent influx to this team, especially with a senior heavy team next year. A lot of these guys will be able to come in and push some of the other younger guys and kind of solidify themselves as future starters down the road.
Yeah, I think a good point. All that's it. Those are very excellent points. And yes, you've come on the show previously. Long time listeners will be like, oh yeah, I know. Billy's been on there talking about that before. I think the thing about it, right, it's because recruiting is a guy evaluating another guy, right? Can he play? And you're trying to project his future onto him. And I think the more opinions you can get, gives you the more informed quality opinions you get can help, you know, project a guy, right? And, like a recruiting service that looks at some of these players that only has an offer from North Texas, you're not going to get all the eyes on it. And so we're really trusting the staff to evaluate them. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And, you know, we've talked about this before. And I think the famous line this week was Mike Leach saying that I never called any of those guys and asked them what I should run on third down. So I'm not going to call them up and ask them who can play on my team. And that's fair. You know, Mike Leach is saying our staff, these guys that I have here, are going to sit down and evaluate a player and determine whether or not he can play on our team. And we're going to rely on our 30 plus years of experience to evaluate them. That's fine. And ultimately that's what you're judged on. But I think, you know, as you say, when 3-4 quality staffs are evaluating a player and thinking that he can play on their team, that gives you a really good opinion. Right. And so if 5 guys whose job it is to rate a dude, you know what I mean? Like, they actually get them to their program and get him in there and develop them. They all think this guy can play. Then he probably can play, right? It increases the likelihood that he can play and he's not just a flash in the pan, or it's not just a coach taking a flyer. That's not to say that you can't find a guy like that, right? Mason Fine is the quintessential, had no offers, North Texas took a flyer on him, and you know, it paid off well for both parties. But you know, there's lots of other guys that are, you know, that, you know, we don't know, even know their names, because we, and they're like, whatever happened to that one linebacker guy? Like, you know, he's never panned out. He never got here, and that's it. So I, you know, all of this is you're playing the percentages, right? And I think the, what you're saying is that North Texas got a class of guys that are probably not going to miss just because everybody thinks that they're very good. And that's exciting. So this is the best class North Texas had. You know, you mentioned the senior laden team. You mentioned, you know, like playing time. How many of these guys do you see playing soon? Like maybe next year? Like last year we had, what, last 2 years, right? Tyreek Davis got some time. And he was like a freshman guy. I think Nick Smith spent a season on the bench, but like Evan Johnson jumped in pretty quick.
Yeah, Deion Noville in 2017, he burned his red shirt. I'm starting to, yeah, guys who actually burned their red shirts. Cameron Johnson in 2017 as well. I think, so kind of one thing that I keep coming back to when thinking about who's going to play early is the new rule that the NCAA enacted this year, where your freshman can play up to four games and still take a redshirt year, basically. So, you know, for example, we saw Cason Martin in two games this year. He's still going to be a redshirt freshman next year, even though we saw him throwing a touchdown pass in the bowl game. It's because of the rule, the new NCAA rule that allows you to play a freshman up to four games and still can take that redshirt. So next year, you know, I think we're going to have a lot of guys who might play a game or two here or there, just because they can. Especially with, to me, the top two groups in this class were the defensive backs and the receivers. And you know, if you look at our team right now, we're pretty set at receiver. But I think the coaches are going to let some of those guys maybe get a chance. For example, if you watched the Texas State Championship games yesterday, you might have seen Deontay Simpson for Beaumont Westbrook had six catches, 106 yards, and two touchdowns on a team that only threw for 144 yards. So he's a guy who played a lot in the slot at Beaumont Westbrook. I think slot receivers probably have the best chance to play early this year, just because Guyton and Bussey are going to play such a high percentage of snaps when the outcome of the game is not yet decided. I know we still have Darden and Lawrence inside, but even then, I think there's more potential to rotate guys there. So I think Deontay Simpson's a guy who could see some time next year, especially within that four game parameter. And then another guy who played yesterday for Pearland Shadow Creek was Keelan Jackson. And I mentioned this on Adam, the post that we had on Mean Green Nation about the recruiting class, but Keelan Jackson he has almost the exact same measurables as Jalen Darden. And he's going to have a chance to be a similar player. I think he might have a little bit even more top end speed than Darden, but you know, Darden is obviously a very polished receiver compared to a guy coming out of high school right now. So I'm not saying Jackson's going to start over him, but he's a guy who also had a good season returning punts. So we could see him back there in the special teams game. And then as far as guys who I think can play more than just kind of within the four games to maintain their red shirt is at linebacker, we lose EJ Agia and we lose Brandon Gardner. The backups to those guys on the teams too deep were a couple of former walk-ons or current walk-ons even. So I think I look at the Murphy twins out of Dallas Bishop Lynch. Those guys have a great combination of size and speed. They're both listed at 6'2", 215, and they run very well. They make plays all over the field. And I think I could definitely see at least one of them kind of taking that spot from EJ Agia at WLB. And then definitely cornerback is probably the next one where you lose both Nate Brooks and Keemon Hall. We have a little bit more depth there. I think Cameron Johnson played a lot this season when Keemon Hall was out. He'll probably be the starter going into spring and going into fall camp. And then the other starter it might be Jameel Moore, who this year played a lot of the nickelback in passing downs. They might give him a shot to kind of be an outside cornerback this season. So after those two guys, you start kind of looking at a depth issue. So I could see Deshaun Gaddy out of Arlington Lamar and Jevon Murray, who I said he might play safety, 24/7 lists him as a safety, but he was a very good cornerback for Shadow Creek this year, same team as Keelan Jackson. Murray and Gaddy, I'm not sure what position they're going to play, but if they're both at cornerback this year, they're both probably pushing the guys we have, Johnson or Moore, whoever it is, for playing time as well. So I think linebacker and cornerback, we did sign a JUCO cornerback in Quinn Whitlock. So he's the guy who has 3 years left of eligibility. So we do have a JUCO signing there, but we didn't sign a JUCO linebacker, which was pretty surprising to me, like I said, given the fact that you lose Garner, you lose Agia, and their backups are walk-ons. So that's really going to give a prime opportunity for the Murphy twins. We also signed a couple other linebackers in Kevin Wood from Converse Judson and Taylor Jacobs from South Grand Prairie, who I don't think are in as great a position to play early, but they're going to have, like I said, the same depth chart opportunity that the Murphy twins are. So just a matter of who comes in here and plays the best right away. As far as any other guys, I think for the most part, like I said, because of the 4-game rule, you're going to see a lot of guys take red shirts, but you might still see them a little bit. So, you know, it's a good opportunity to kind of get a taste of what the freshman class is like, while also kind of keeping the freshmen happy, because redshirt years are pretty tough. Redshirt years often lead to transfers. Redshirt years are a pretty tough acclimation for freshmen who've been kind of the stars of every team they've played on up till that point, to kind of go in and just sit the bench the whole entire year and have to practice all week knowing they're not going to play. So, like I said, it's a good little treat for them to actually get to play some games and not burn their red shirt. So I think we're going to see a lot of them this year because of that.
Yeah, and I think it helps them in their development, because you get to see them actually play, and then you have some film from them for them to, you know, to work on. You know, it's not like, do you see how this guy's doing it? You know, like you said, the players are going to be like, I could probably do better than that. Well, now we actually get to see you out there. You went out there and you played, you made a mistake, or you did a good job, and here's how we'll learn from that. And all that is good stuff. Last season, last recruiting class, 2018, we signed with Tim Faison, was it Larry Nixon? I think there's another couple guys. So
Hunt at linebacker.
Yeah, a couple classes that we got. That one wasn't as highly rated. I think Tim Faison was the highest rated dude in that one. But you can see that North Texas has been building in preparation for losing Brandon Garner and EJ Agia, in case anybody's wondering about roster building. I think those are good things, right? I mean, like I said, you sign like three or four anticipating, you know, the three spots changing. You want guys that can get in and compete. You want every freshman linebacker to come in to challenge for the starting spot, right? That's how you want to do it, because it makes the starter better, or it gives you a better player, right? That's what you want every season. You want somebody to come in and challenge. You want internal roster competition. I think that's you know, supporting your point there, that it gives you a foundation for really good teams, right? We don't want this to be the only number one class, the only, you know, 64th ranked class. We want the next one to be a little bit better, right? So those freshman guys come in and challenge these freshman guys, and then, you know, you fill in the holes as needed. We didn't sign a super amazing quarterback, unless I guess you think Will Keen is amazing. What do you think? Let's go just like position by position, because this is what you did in the post. What are your thoughts? Your podcast thoughts on Will Keen?
Sure. Yeah. Will Keeney he's a guy who kind of bounced, or he played at Argyle Liberty Christian. And then I think his first 2 years of high school, and then he went on to Owosso in Oklahoma, and they won a state championship last year in, I believe, the highest division in Oklahoma 6A. So he was a quality quarterback in high school. And I wrote about this on the post. He had good offers. He had Maryland and New Mexico, and I think one more, but, the thing with him is he's kind of a dual threat quarterback. He's not necessarily the fastest quarterback. He's kind of one of those quarterbacks who use his athleticism to kind of escape bad situations in the pocket or kind of pick up chunk yards when they're there, when, you know, the coverage has dropped back and he's got an opening. He's not a Jason Bean, for example, who we signed last year. Jason Bean's probably a guy who can break off big runs. But Keeney's, I mean, still classified as a dual threat because he does have the ability to run. He's 6'1", so he's not the biggest dude. But to me, I think the biggest thing that I saw in his film was that he does a good job of the kind of intermediate passing game over the middle, which if I'm evaluating quarterbacks in high school, I don't want to walk away from watching their film saying that that's the best thing they do in the passing game. I want to be able to see, is he hitting throws on the outside? Is he hitting, you know, throws to the outside on the far side of the field, you know, more than 10 yards downfield? Is he, like I said, is he beating teams? Is he making, you know, big throws with his arm that most high school quarterbacks can't make? And I think he did do a little bit of that. But like I said, the biggest thing that he does is kind of kill people over the middle. And, you know, at North Texas, I think you can get away with that with your quarterback, that being his strength, even if he might be subpar on the outside, just because, you know, you have guys like Darden and Lawrence and guys coming in like Keelan Jackson. I think you can still be a productive quarterback kind of doing the Tom Brady thing. Check downs over the middle, scheming guys open. But like I said, the thing with Kenny is he's got to be able to show that he can hit throws on the outside, hit the deeper throws in particular, because there's so much competition right now to replace Mason Fine with. You got two guys that redshirted this year, technically three, if you count Austin Ani, who he's the guy who signed to play quarterback at TCU in 2012, ended up taking a baseball contract to play for the Yankees. He was a true freshman this year. He had a red shirt because he actually was at Arkansas in the spring. He's a guy who I think he can be a guy who competes in that quarterback competition as well. You got Cade Pearson, who's going to be a redshirt sophomore next year. So you've got a big logjam of guys who could replace Mason Fine. So in order to see who's actually going to do it, you have to have some differentiating quality that you bring. And for Kenny, I think he's going to have to be able to hit throws on the outside to kind of differentiate himself. Because if his game is more over the middle, speed-wise, he's not going to be the fastest guy in that group, although he might be kind of towards the top. Like I said, he's got to be able to stand out. And that's going to be the biggest thing to watch going forward. If, you know, if you watch maybe a fall practice or some kind of competition that he gets to play in, that's what I would look for, is to see, can he make the outside throws?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you can develop your arm a little bit. You can hit bigger throws as you develop, but I mean, you want to start somewhere good, right? You don't want to have, you don't want to need like 8 years of development, right? Cause you only have five at the most, right? And then there's other guys, you know, there. So I think that's good. I mean, you mentioned the transfer. I think everybody's excited mostly about Cason Martin. Everybody being, you know, the greater North Texas fan base. I think it'll be interesting to see Will in there. Let's go to running back Oscar Attaway III. He's a guy out of Arkansas. What do we know about him, and where does he fit in this roster, which might have another spot? I mean, with the potential loss of a running back wanting to transfer. So tell us about Oscar.
Yeah, he's a guy who he played. So I mentioned that Kenny won a state championship his junior year in Oklahoma. Attaway is another guy who won a state championship in his junior year at North Little Rock in Arkansas, which is arguably the top program in the state. He's listed at 6 foot, 208 pounds. And I also mentioned this in the post, but if he truly is 6 foot, 208 pounds, he will be the biggest scholarship running back that we have. And one of the big talking points for fans among our running backs was, we don't have a power back, or we don't have a guy who can get one or 2 yards when we need it, because we got stopped on a lot of crucial third and short, fourth and short plays this year against UAB and against La Tech and ODU. Those games that we lost, we were unable to pick up some short yardage plays. And yeah, DeAndre Torrey's your running back, who's not a huge, who's 5'7", 185 or whatever he is. And then, you know, the offensive line has been heavily criticized as well. But, you know, Attaway, he might be a guy who can kind of fill that role, at least maybe not right now, but, you know, as he kind of develops and gets the torch passed to him. I think he also played a lot of safety at North Little Rock. He also played special teams. He played wide receiver. You know, sometimes with running backs, you see them kind of get split out at receiver. He got experience just being a true receiver. He has experience, if you look at his film, kind of being like an X receiver, where he's on the short side of the field, one-on-one coverage, and they trust him to go get that one-on-one ball. So I think he's, as a pass catcher, is pretty advanced for a high school recruit, because he wasn't just, you know, running routes out of the backfield or just getting little checkdowns, you know, whenever he's pass blocking and the pocket collapses. He's actually got pretty good experience running routes, and I think that'll help in this scheme. You know, being in an air raid, if you're a running back who can run routes well, catch a lot of passes out of the backfield, kind of reminds me of who is the Texas Tech running back? I think his name was Torian Henderson in the mid 2000s.
Yeah, he had 100 catches.
That dude was, you know, you would look at Texas Tech stats, and he would be pushing for 1,000 yards receiving most years. So, you know, there's definitely room in the air raid for a guy who can catch a lot of passes. And Attaway seems like a guy who can kind of be that type of player. Maybe not to that degree, but at least, you know, give you a solid running back option to pass to. He's a bigger guy. We had, for basically the length of this entire recruiting cycle, we had another running back committed in Garrison Johnson from Manville. And, you know, we had Johnson committed, and we still got Attaway as well, which, you know, was, I think that's pretty telling that they liked Attaway, because if it's more of a running back that they're not as high on, you might not have seen them take Attaway's commitment. If Johnson was committed, because Garrison Johnson from Manville was a guy who had P5 offers. He was our highest or second highest rated recruit for most of the cycle. And like I said, if you get, a marginal running back wanting to commit to you, you might say, we'll pass. We already got this guy. But like I said, the staff took Attaway. So I think that's a pretty good indication that they're high on him. So, and it paid off, because he's ends up being the running back of this class. And we didn't sign a running back last class. So, or not a high school one, at least. So yeah, I think he's going to have a chance to, he might have a chance to get some playing time, like I said, within that 4-game rule, because if you look at the depth chart, Adam alluded to it. Anthony Weiss mentioned on Twitter that he's looking to be a grad transfer. Good for him. It's, you only get one college football experience, and he's got 1 year left of eligibility. He's got a degree. Might as well go try and play that last year and kind of have a chance to actually, you know, get on the field and get some yards and score some touchdowns. So also a running back, you've got DeAndre Torrey coming back, who's coming off of a huge season. And you've also got Lauren Easley, who's heading into his senior year. He might be eligible for a medical redshirt, not really sure yet. He might be heading into senior year, might be his junior year. He may or may not be ready when the season starts. I haven't heard too much about the injury, but it sounds like it, I don't remember what it was, but it seemed like a somewhat severe one. And then Nick Smith, who redshirt sophomore, was the backup to Torrey. So you just those three guys. After Torrey, it starts getting a little bit murky, the depth chart, because like I said, you've got Easley, who may or may not be ready right when the season starts, and you've got Nick Smith, who, you know, it's hard with Nick Smith being a junior and DeAndre Torrey being a junior to see if, you know, Smith really wants to stick it out. I hope he does. He's a really good player. But I think even if he does, you know, he's your number two. And then after that, you've got maybe Evan Johnson, who's kind of more of a special teams guy. So, you know, I think out of that group, you've got a chance to get a freshman some playing time. You've got enough depth where you can redshirt, but also you've got a good enough opportunity for a freshman to get some early playing time.
Yeah, and I think the other part of all that is that this staff has been pretty good about getting running backs playing time. When I think first year it was Jeff Wilson's getting a lot of touches, but so was Willie Ivory. And I think, I forget who else was getting some touches, but then the next season, you know, Willie Ivory left the program or was forced out of the program. It was Jeff Wilson and Nick Smith was getting a lot of touches. And then this year we're all thinking Nick Smith, maybe Evan Johnson again, because Evan Johnson came in and he had a lot of touches also. And you thought, okay, they're going to be the guys. And it turns out DeAndre Torrey won a spot, you know, after Lauren Easley goes down. Evan Johnson, you know, he was on the field for like passing situations, but not really touching the ball at all. And Nick Smith fell down the depth chart. You know, yeah, running back is it's not too difficult to learn the position. I think the pass blocking, the pass responsibility aspects are the most difficult, but taking the ball and running with it are, you know, that's one of the most basic and fundamental aspects of football, right? And I mean, everybody has played running back at some point in their football career, simply because, you know, that's what you just play around with your friends playing, right? I think you can get a running back out here. I think Attaway can get some situational things. I like that there's a lot of talent and a lot of guys that could play. And I'd be happy if DeAndre Torrey got more carries. I'd be happy if Lauren Easley came back and got, you know, more carries. I'd be happy to see Nick Smith again, because I think sometimes he's really good. You know, it's hard to say because we're not in the running back room. We don't know why they're sitting a guy or playing another guy more. But you can kind of see hints of it, just pass blocking mistakes. I mentioned before a couple times on the podcast. I forget who it was, but somebody left the backfield, ran into a zone, and sat down in front of a receiver who was already in that zone. So clearly somebody made a mistake there. I'm excited about the short yardage thing. I don't necessarily think that it is a running back issue. There's too often when these running backs are getting hit in the backfield. And I took a look at some numbers. We actually had the same first down conversion rate and success rate on third and short, third one and three, as we did with Jeff Wilson. We didn't do that well with Jeff Wilson at running back. And he's, you know, he's an NFL running back, right? You know, so like, what was it? And you know, he ran hard, and it was a lot of it was getting hit in the backfield. It's hard to get started when you know you grab the ball and then you're tackled, or you're getting tackled and then you get the ball. So I think offensive line is going to make the run game look better and make all the running backs look better. I do like DeAndre Torrey, and it's hard for me to see any of these guys, some of the guys we talked about before, but then even Attaway, unless he's just amazing, see them displacing Torrey just because he was, I mean, right, 18 touchdowns, and he was really good. He was really good, and he was explosive. He did fumble a little too much, but he was pretty amazing. Let's move on to tight end. Y, H-back, Asher, Alberding. He's interesting. 6'4", 230, out of Houston. Was it Clear Lake? He's big. He's good. Where do you see them using him? Where do you see him playing in his program? Like how soon?
Well, another thing I talked about was that so this is the fourth year of the Latrell era, and so far at tight end we've seen two guys. We've seen Kelvin Smith and Caleb Chumley. And those guys were just coming off their redshirt seasons whenever Latrell got here. So he's basically been able to say, okay, you know, I've got these two guys to play my tight end position. And so I don't need another tight end. I can just use my scholarships elsewhere. These two guys will, you know, as much or as little as they, you know, employ a tight end on the field, those guys are going to be sufficient for filling in that spot and filling in those roles. So, like I said, they haven't really needed to sign a tight end until now you're heading into their senior seasons. So he's gone out and gotten one. You know, Alberding is, he's a guy who, you know, he's got a good combination of size, speed, athleticism, 6'4", 230. He played in high school primarily primarily on defense, at defensive end, and then offensively he played for a scheme that was pretty run heavy. So athletically, he's a good athlete. I think he's got a chance to maybe be better athletically than Kelvin Smith is, and you know, maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but he's a little bit taller. And I think he's a guy who, like I said, he's going to have time to develop because those guys are still there. And then after this season, it's going to be his time. I mean, if you think about it from a depth chart standpoint, he probably has the clearest path to a quote unquote starting role because Smith and Chumley are both seniors this season. And then he gets a red shirt and then boom, he's the only guy left and we might sign a guy there. But at the same time, we don't necessarily start a tight end in our base package. So even though he's got a chance to move the depth chart quick, he still may not see the field a whole lot next, you know, whenever he gets that chance. But, you know, I think he's pretty, you know, he's a solid high school tight end, 6'4", 230, good size, runs well. He's, you know, he has good catches on his highlights. He primarily worked the middle of the field in his highlights, which obviously that's kind of what a tight end does. But sometimes you'll see high school tight ends get chances to get split out more wide, kind of like Rob Gronkowski does for the Patriots. So, you know, I think he's going to have, like a lot of these guys, he's going to have a chance to learn the scheme. And one thing that's been interesting about this class is, you know, linemen, like I said, Alberding at tight end. You've got some guys who are going to come in from a heavy under center scheme that, you know, features two or more running backs all the time and is, you know, probably running the ball solid 65-70% of the time. So you've got guys who are going to come in here and just are going to be playing under a completely different scheme than what they're used to in high school. So, you know, that's obviously why things like that are why red shirts are what they are and how important they are. You know, these guys are going to learn how to do different things. Alberding is going to learn how to probably pass block more than he ever has. He's obviously going to learn the routes. He's going to learn, he's going to learn probably the H-back role as well that kind of Kenan Mackey has been playing. So, you know, he's a guy who I think this year he's going to come in. He's probably going to redshirt. Like I said before, with all these guys, it's going to sound pretty much the same with a lot of these guys where you're going to see some of these guys on the field, even though they're still redshirting. And, you know, that might be a case as well with him. So yeah, he's a solid tight end prospect, had an offer from Kansas, good offer list, pretty highly rated guy. And you know, it's obvious that the staff kind of wanted him. It seemed like they pinpointed him early on as the guy they wanted as the tight end for their class and they got him early. So it's always encouraging to see, you know, as I mentioned, these offer lists, that's what you want. You want to get that guy you pinpointed and get him instead of start settling for your third, fourth option. So it seemed like he was their guy and they got him at that position.
All right. Let's talk about the fun things, because I think generally speaking, everybody cares about running backs and wide receivers and maybe quarterbacks, right? Wide receiver, you mentioned him a little bit, Deontay Simpson, Damon Ward, Keelan Jackson, Kateeb Lyles. Let's talk about him, because he was kind of a late addition. And I think Seth Luttrell tweeted surprise. This was kind of like, well, Garrison Johnson, there's, you know, you didn't want to sign now, and we were not going to wait because there's some guys on our list. Because I think Luttrell said we had a spot open up late. What can you tell me about him other than he's from El Paso and he's a three-star guy?
Yeah, I think he might have been our highest rated recruit, our second highest rated recruit, according to 24/7 composite. So, I mean, he's probably the best, maybe the best wide receiver prospect I've ever seen us sign. From a standpoint of offer list, at least, when I think of the good receivers that I've seen us sign, the guy I come back to is Tigori. Out of high school, he was a very promising guy. He was having a good sophomore season under Luttrell. He was leading us in yards, and then he ended up getting dismissed and went to SFA and had a pretty good senior season there. But, you know, I think Lyles is a guy who he's kind of the perfect heir apparent to Bussey and Guyton. He's a guy, he's 6'2", he runs very well, and he's a very fluid athlete. You know, his change of direction in his route running, his fluidity in his route running is pretty impressive. And, you know, when you're 6'2", 190, and you're playing in El Paso where competition isn't necessarily the best, you don't necessarily need great route running. You know, with his size and speed, he's able to pretty much, you know, run straight lines and run, you know, civil post routes and slant routes and do pretty good there. But, you know, I think from a physical standpoint, he's going to be a guy who can pretty much run every route because of his size, because of how well he gets in and out of his cuts. You know, I think he's going to be a guy who I think he's going to push to be the immediate backup to both Guyton and Bussey this season. And, you know, maybe they don't want him learning both positions. Maybe they think he can. You know, I'm not sure how difficult that would be for a true freshman to kind of learn the X and the Z. But like I said, I think talent wise, he's right, probably right up there with them. Pretty much right away. He, you know, sometimes just because receivers have talent, that doesn't mean they're able to come in right away. Receiver is one of those positions where sometimes you can get freshmen to come in right away and contribute, and sometimes they need a little bit of time to develop. So we'll see. Maybe he does need some time, maybe he doesn't. He had quite a few, you know, power conference offers. I think he had Texas Tech and Indiana and maybe one or two more. You know, he had a very good offer list, and playing in El Paso, that's pretty good because it's not necessarily the best exposure out there. It's not awful exposure, but it's not the level of exposure, you know, he'd get if he were playing in, say, a Houston or a Dallas powerhouse program. So, you know, I think he, like I said, he's a guy who's going to come in and have a chance to one, play immediately behind those guys, which for a freshman may not be that much because those guys play so many snaps. But, you know, he's a guy who's going to be able to push the guys behind Bussey and Guyton.
Yeah, the backup guys out there were Greg White, another highly touted receiver that North Texas grabbed, and was it Cujo Young, right? Those are the main backups out there.
And they also had, I think with Cujo Young, and I think he was listed as a co-backup with Jair Shorter, who was a true freshman last year from Killeen, who he redshirted. So they were listed as co-backups, which kind of tells me that Shorter had a pretty good fall camp, but they wanted to redshirt him. So Cudjo Young was the guy getting the backup snaps there.
Yeah, I think if there's any spot that looks like it's open, it is the backup wide receiver thing. Because when Rigo Bussey went out, you can see that the offense was kind of limping a little bit. And you know, Jalen Guyton, who had a good season, but he wasn't quite himself. He had a lot of drops and. I mean, I think a few guys were pointing out some route running, kind of, I don't want to say loafing, but just not at his level that he showed a couple seasons ago. So if you can get a guy in, come in and push him for those kind of snaps, right? You know, that's good, right? I think I'd like to see a little bit more Greg White because he was pretty highly touted, and I don't know if he had the greatest season. I felt like there was opportunity for him to jump in there and kind of do more. I think he had like three catches, four catches, something like that. He would get in, run a route, make a catch, and then get off the field. So do you want to talk a little bit about the inside receivers? You talked a little bit about Keelan Jackson. What are you thinking here?
Yeah, so the other three receivers that they signed, and as a whole, this was an amazing recruiting class. I mean, for receivers, I think this receiver class, I put it up there with any G5 receiver class out there, especially for the scheme that we run. Keelan Jackson, 5'9" guy from Shadow Creek, not obviously a big guy, but very fast and very smooth in the open field. He's one of those guys who, when he gets loose, you know, it doesn't matter if guys have angles on him. He's still so quick, so fast, and so shifty that he can make guys miss in the open field pretty easily. He also had a big time offer list. I think 10 other offers, which is 10 other FBS offers, which is very high. And then, like I said, he's a guy who can return kicks too. So we might see him there this year to kind of give us a jolt. I know when we think of our punt returns this year, there's one play in particular that everyone will always think of when they think of the 2018 season. But I think, there was room. There's definitely room to improve on the punt return game. Maybe it's still Keegan Brewer this year. Maybe they give Jackson a shot. I think it's improvable, but he's definitely a guy who I think he's going to come in as a freshman. So he's going to be 2 years behind Jalen Darden. I think he's kind of the perfect next guy up there to replace Darden once Darden's gone 2 years from now. And then the other two guys were actually teammates at Beaumont Westbrook, a team that lost by 1 point in the state championship game yesterday, 5A or 6A Division II. Deontay Simpson and Damon Ward. And, it's funny, they were listed at the exact same size. And Deontay Simpson was the higher touted of the two. He had a really good season and a pretty run heavy offense. Yesterday, like I mentioned, he had 106 yards, 2 touchdowns for an offense that passed for just 144 yards. So he was clearly the focal point of the passing game for, a team that made it all the way to the state championship game. He's got a lot of things that he does well as a receiver, and he's a guy who I could see them putting outside. I could see them putting inside, which is where he primarily played for Beaumont Westbrook. He's got the size and the speed to play either. Maybe down the line, if you get Lyles on the outside, maybe another one of these guys like Greg White or Jair Shorter on the outside, maybe that pushes Simpson to play more inside. So I don't really know, but that's going to be something interesting to watch. But like I said, I think wherever you have him, he's going to be a really solid playmaker and a guy who can make big plays and big catches. And then the other guy is Damon Ward, who, again, same high school as Simpson, same size at 6'1" and 6'2". Ward primarily played outside in that offense. And I think that offense might have started throwing the ball a little bit less when they lost Ward. But had they had Ward and Simpson, it might have been a little bit more of a pass-heavy offense. But, Ward's another guy. He's probably the least touted out of the entire receiver bunch. And he himself, had 4 offers, was a very, very productive high school receiver. I think he's going to do just fine here as well. He had a season-ending injury. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but, I don't know if he's going to be ready for fall camp. I don't know I don't know how severe it was or how long he's going to be out. He could be ready, over the summer. He could be, doing kind of team stuff over the summer as well. So, but either way, I think he's a guy who's probably going to redshirt. So again, just like Simpson, he's a guy I think could play inside or outside. And I think it's just kind of, I think it's going to come to, a lot of times when you hear with the offensive line, you'll hear, we just want to get our 5 best guys out there. Then we put, we get our 5 best guys, and then we let them fill the gaps. And we don't necessarily just put, the next guy up at center. If our 5 best linemen, 3 of them are guards, then we might play one of them at center. I think it might be the same kind of thing with receiver. I think you might just eventually see, like I said, just get the 4 best guys out there because some of these guys are so multi-talented, like Simpson and Ward.
Yeah, I think, I was mentioning about Darden. I think people forget that he was the number one punt returner, a season ago. And he returned one against Rice. But he just had a couple of drops. Yeah, I think he was the one that muffed it, right, against Louisiana Tech.
You mean the road game in 2017?
No, this season.
Or was it this year?
Yeah, like Darden was returning kicks.
Oh, yeah, you're right, it was.
I think you're right. The more competition you can get at any of these positions makes everybody better, right? And football is specialized, but it's not so specialized that you can't change positions. I mean, we got Kenny Byers; he played cornerback, and we put him at the inside receiver. It's not that difficult. You can learn it in off season. you know, I think any of these guys are good enough to slot in inside or outside if we need them to. And yeah, get your best four guys out there. You know, if we can have we can get Rico Bussey on the inside, and if that was the best spot for him, I mean, he could do it. Right, right now, he works best for what we need him to do on the outside. Generally speaking, outside receivers, you need them to get deeper. They run a lot of like shorter routes, crossing routes. Everybody kind of runs the same routes. But the outside receivers, you need them to beat press coverage a lot of times, get deep, and then make catches over the middle or like the post routes or the, you know, like the vertical routes. We throw like little fade stuff to Rico Bussey. That's what you need. You need them to stretch the defense. Guyton last season, we needed him to stretch the defense. And once he did, it opened it up for Mike Lawrence underneath and everybody else. So if you can get a tiny guy, right, like my friend said the other day, hey, Steve Smith played outside receiver. I was like, yeah. I mean, if you get a Steve Smith, you know, a little 5'6" guy that can do those things, then yeah, I mean, you know, fine. It is a lot harder to throw to a 5'6" receiver, a 5'9" guy, running, you know, 30 yards down the field, you know, placing it in a tiny bucket that way, right? Than it is to hit a 6'4" guy with long strides and super long arms and just has a ridiculous target radius. But I mean, if we have an accurate quarterback and he can do it, then, you know, it's fine. It's not a big deal at all. So I agree with you, man. The best guys, let's get them out there and play. Let's walk through the offensive linemen, because it's just kind of a point of emphasis. We don't have to go too in detail, but let's just touch on these guys. Was it Byers, Brunner, Cassidy, and was it Planton?
Planton.
Yeah. I think Planton's the most interesting guy because he's going to be replacing Jordan Murray, who was probably, he had the most scrutiny out of any offensive lineman that we've had here in a long time. Some of that just because he played for so long. I mean, he was what, like a 3-4 year starter.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he was starting back in that 2015 season.
Yeah. So, Planton is a Virginia Tech transfer, left tackle. I mean, do you see him just kind of slotting in there and playing amazingly well? What do you see?
Yeah, it's a tough one because he's a guy who, he was a backup at Virginia Tech, and whenever, a lot of times when we get these transfers from big time schools, we say, oh, he was a backup. Well, yeah, technically everyone is not starting as a backup. So what does it mean within, you know, the realm of backup? Was he an immediate backup? Was he third or fourth on the depth chart and, you know, not even getting play, you know, playing time when, you know, in garbage time, you know, how far down was he? And he was a guy who, he was listed as a co-starter heading. I think he was actually listed as a starter at left guard heading into the spring, and at the end of spring. And then, from what I read, he was expected to be the starter at left guard this heading into the season. And then there was kind of a surprise move on the depth chart where the coaches picked somebody else to start at left guard, and then he was relegated to, you know, just being a backup guard. You know, with the offensive line, you don't typically see a lot of subbing during the game. So he wasn't the starter. He didn't play. And after a few games, he decided he was going to go the grad transfer route. The coaches gave him their blessing and let him kind of spend most of his fall taking a look. And he decided on North Texas fairly early. I think it was November, which, again, for a guy during the season – who's, you know, technically still on another FBS roster to choose us that early, you know, tells us that it's a pretty good fit. And yeah, he's replacing Jordan Murray. He's got the size. He's, you know, he's got decent pedigree, you know, being a pretty, you know, a P5 level recruit, a guy who he got some starting time last year as a redshirt sophomore, he played, they had an injury. I think he got some starting time at left tackle, or at least significant game experience. And then, you know, I think, like I said, I think he's a guy who he's kind of, you would say, probably a higher end backup. So it wasn't like he was just buried on the depth chart. He was a guy who was right there in the mix, which kind of reminds me of like when we got back in the McCartney era, we got a lot of guys like that where it was like, yeah, Marcus Trice, we got him. He was, you know, he was basically right there back up on the depth chart. It wasn't like he was 3-4 guys down. So then when he came to UNT, it was a pretty easy transition from kind of immediate backup at a power conference to a starter, you know, in a Conference USA program. Hopefully Planton can be, you know, somewhat similar effective. I don't think he's going to be an all-conference player like Trice was, but, you know, I think the biggest thing is just that he can kind of solidify that role and kind of bring a little bit more consistency to the table, which, you know, even though he's a redshirt senior, he's still a pretty inexperienced player. So, you know, I wish we had two more seasons of him, but the fact that we only have one to me means we're still going to have to see some growing pains probably. But the hope is that, like you said, he's an improvement, and he can be. I don't think it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility. I think you're hoping that he can be an improvement. The question is how much, and, you know, I think he can be a decent improvement over Murray, but I also, at the same time, I don't expect him to be an all-conference guy or anything like that. But again, just hoping for consistency. Good thing is he's here in the spring, so you're going to hope that he really locks down that spot and gives us a guy going into every Saturday who we feel confident on is at least a, you know, solid Conference USA level starter guy.
Yeah, and again, it's Mason Fine's senior season. You don't want to break in a freshman left tackle out there or a converted guy. I mean, you know, I think that's the thinking there. And I know they have a couple other dudes that have been on the roster, been in the program. At the very least, it gives them some competition. Again, you don't want to, like you said before, you don't want a guy that's there by default because you don't have anybody better. If you bring in the guy that's, you know, that could have been in the running at Virginia Tech to be the starter there, and, you know, another guy beats him out, then that's great. Then that's what you want, right? I think about, like, maybe worst case scenario is kind of like Alec Morris, who was good. He had the tools, and I think if he had two seasons here, he would have been great. But, right. He just wasn't getting reps there at Alabama, and so he came here. There was a lot of rust, and, you know, Mason Fine didn't have that rust because, you know, he was a starter in high school, and he came in and, you know, essentially beat Alec Morris out fairly quickly. You know, like that's, you know, you're like, well, here's the Alabama transfer, and there's a lot of stuff written about him, et cetera, et cetera. But it didn't work because of the timing. So we'll see. I think, you know, like you said, because Planton was getting reps, you know, second team reps are more than third, fourth team reps. You know, even if he was, you know, like not the starter, I think he's getting enough. Those are important, right? Because you've been playing, you've been practicing, and even though it's not game speed, it's still practice speed. And that is important. Overall offensive line, we've had some good, what is the word? We've had some good classes past couple seasons. I know last year's signing day, the staff was pretty excited about the linemen they signed. Just past couple seasons, because I know, you know, you have some hot sports opinions about offensive line, right? Given your experience, what do you think is the issue with our line, if anything, or is it just sometimes the other team has better defensive line? What do you think the issue is? Where, you know, have they improved by signing some of these guys?
Well, you know, that's tough. To me, I would say the offensive line was probably the most disappointing part of the class just from a standpoint of offer list. And, you know, to me, I really like to look at offer list because, you know, Adam mentioned, you know, I played offensive line. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on it. you know, just being looking at offer list allows me to defer the judgment to the college football coaches instead of me trying to tell you, yeah, you know, this guy is amazing because I say so. Well, and I think that's it's kind of been a common trend is you look at pretty much most of the offensive linemen that the coaches have signed at this point have not been super highly recruited guys, have not been guys with more than, you know, two other FBS offers, a lot of them one or zero. And one guy who was a pretty decent change of pace from that this year was Daxon Byers, the tackle from Edmond, Oklahoma. He's 6'5", 280. You know, apparently he's a guy who started his football playing career as a receiver and just kind of kept growing and growing, which it shows on his tape because I think he has the best footwork of the group. I think he's got the best chance to kind of be a tackle, which is the hardest position to find on the line. So I think he's a guy who's gonna come in redshirt and then maybe have a chance to kind of take over for Plan. I think offensive line is probably still going to be the most important position group of this class, which is why I was a little bit disappointed to see us, you know, continue to take guys who didn't necessarily have great offer lists. But, you know, it's going to come down to, you know, can they develop those guys? Because offensive line is one of the positions that I will say I might tend to be more okay with not having great offer lists, just because it's so hard to project, and it's so hard to see, you know, is a guy, you know, in high school, for example, Alex Woodworth was not a big time college prospect, but he was something like 6'2", 225 as a junior. And then he hit a huge growth spurt, and his senior, he was 6'4", 260 or something like that. So, you know, you got a lot of cases where, you know, guys kind of don't fully develop into their bodies until they're, you know, later teens, 18, 19, 20. And you also got a case where, you know, guys, you don't necessarily see guys do things. Like, for example, the other two guys, John Brunner and Chris Cassidy, I didn't see a whole lot of pass blocking because their offenses were about downhill run blocking. And even in the passing game, what you typically saw more of was play action, where the linemen still have to do essentially run blocking. So you don't see them dropping back and you know, dropping back in pass coverage and seeing how well they kick back and how well they move with a pass rusher coming at them while they're moving backwards. So things like that, it's kind of harder to project. But you know, I think this is going to probably be the make or break. I mean, you've got to start developing these guys. And, you know, I think if they continue to kind of have offensive line be the spot where we look back and say, man, if only the offensive line was better, you've got to start saying, okay, we can't just keep trying to get these, you know, low-key sleeper prospects. We've got to really push to get the top prospects like we are with receiver and defensive back. You know, I would feel a lot better about this class if we had offensive linemen who have the same offer lists as, you know, our receivers do, you know, having a few lower end P5 offers and some, you know, eight overall, you know, FBS offers. So, you know, that being said, you know, we haven't seen these guys, so maybe they do end up and be those kind of players that we want them to be to improve the offensive line. Yeah, I think we still, this year, we're going to still see a lot of seniors. We're still going to see Plant's a senior, Woodworth's a senior, Sasaya Mose is a senior. So you're going to still see, you know, as far as improving our team next year, those guys won't really factor in. You're going to need the guys that you've already, pretty much the guys that you've already seen play. You're going to need those guys to take that next step. But as far as down the line, like I said, you're going to need to do a really good job of developing these guys, coaching them up, getting their bodies right to, you know, fit the mold of the position, and then, you know, really work on their footwork and being able to play in this scheme as opposed to playing in a, you know, high school run heavy scheme.
I agree with everything you just said there. I think what gives me some hope, right, is that, like, I think three of our starters now and three of our best offensive linemen, the Mosley brothers, Jacob Brammer, they were all a two-star, kind of had lower low offer lists in 2017, and then
right,
you know, here they are playing. So I think, you know, I think we can do okay. And you know, like I said, I think Alex Woodworth was another guy who, if I remember right, they kind of threw him in there because they're like, we just need a guy, and they kind of moved him around. But I think originally they wanted him to redshirt and kind of get better, spend some time kind of learning the position and getting bigger. But then they didn't have that luxury, right? They were like, all right,
well, he redshirted under McCarney, and then that, as a redshirt freshman, he played under Latrell, and that was where he kind of got thrown in. He was like a guard, and then they threw him in at left tackle.
Yeah,
that Rice game, he made like a big block on like a screen pass, I think, and they that was the time they all mobbed him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, and so you know, I think that like you said, you can find some guys that are under. Like, and I think didn't Manasseh Mosey play? I think he had like service academy offers, right? And I think they saw him. Yeah, I think there is a role and there's value in getting a guy that can whose skill set in high school was just crushing other guys in a power run scheme. Especially when you see us not being able to get a third and one, right? You're like, maybe some of those skills are useful right now. I guess what I was asking about, hey, you know, what do you see on the offensive line? I mostly mean not that these recruits, but like so far, last couple seasons under North Texas, what has been the biggest issue in your opinion with our offensive line? Is it
as far as on the field?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just been. I think for me, what I've kind of seen is that you've got maybe some guys who are maybe by nature a little bit more of kind of run blocking guys. And like you mentioned, you know, the Mosey brothers, they came from Trinity where, you know, everything's all under center. And, you know, I think even though, you know, Sasai is a little bit older, I think you've seen with breaking in a lot of guys like the Mosey brothers, like Brammer, you know, even Woodworth over the past, you know, 3 years, like I said, he came in and he was, you know, he was a redshirt freshman, played early. I think, to me, when you have a young offensive line or when you're breaking in offensive line, it's kind of easier to play to their strengths. And I think these guys might have been kind of by nature, and especially guys who were recruited by Dan McCarney, you know, even Jordan Murray, kind of by nature, they were more kind of run blocking, you know, heavy run offense kind of linemen by nature. And then they've been asked to come in and kind of play in an air raid system. And like you said, the Mosey brothers have been good players for us. But I think as an offensive line, you've seen them go from, look, we want to get down and dirty in the run game, go from that to, look, you're playing in an air raid offense where we're going to throw the ball, you know, 40 to 50 times a game. I think it's kind of had to retrain them, you know, with game experience. And you've kind of seen a progression of, you know, are these guys, you know, how are they developed enough as pass blockers? And then, you know, if you start getting beat, you know, getting beat in the passing game, then you might start losing confidence in the running game, even though that might be more of your natural skill set. So I think it's just been kind of, you know, guys, a lot of guys who are either, like I said, either brought in to play in a, you know, heavier run scheme with McCarney, and you know, a situation of guys who are, you know, we're the best linemen we could get, but at the same time are still kind of trying to learn how to play within the scheme. So I think it's just, it's a very hard scheme to kind of project linemen for, because so many high schools, you know, even in the era of spread offenses, so many high schools are still so run heavy because, you know, you just, it's harder to find good high school quarterbacks. So a lot of times you'll just see guys, teams put their best athletes at quarterback and just want to run the ball all the time. And you don't typically see very polished pass protectors coming out of high school. And in such a pass heavy offense, it's kind of taken some time, I think.
Yeah. And I know the NFL's had some trouble with this, right? Just with like the more restrictive rules on like, you know, practice time. Yeah, I think a lot of offensive line coaches will say that you need reps, and if you're not getting as many reps, you know, they're not going to be as good, right? And it's like it's a whole thing where all five guys need to play. It's not just, well, I was playing great at offensive line, but you were terrible. It's, you know, everybody's, you have to cover for the next guy. It's the most team group that you have, I think. All right, so I know we're kind of going long on this episode, so let's switch gears and kind of run through the defense a little bit quicker.
Yeah, for sure. I can do, I guess, front seven and then secondary.
Yeah, let's do it. What do you see? You got Dotson, Walker, Sal on defense, defensive line. You mentioned Murphy, the Murphy twins, Taylor Jacobs, Kevin Wood. So let's talk about that front four, and then we'll go to defensive backs.
Yeah, so, you know, front four-wise, It's been interesting to me just to see how this coaching staff has kind of approached their scheme. A lot of the younger guys that we've signed, we haven't even seen them necessarily on the two deep. So I don't really know necessarily where everybody projects right now. So, you know, it's the front seven is the hardest thing to project. And kind of what I was mentioning in the post is this isn't a traditional 4-3 scheme where you got, you know, your defensive ends, your defensive tackles, your outside linebackers, your inside linebackers. It's a little bit more complex than that and a little bit more less traditional as far as body types. So, you know, the defensive linemen who we announced were Jimmy Walker, David Sow, and Kenneth Dotson. And you know, I think Dotson and Walker were both guys who are defensive ends out of high school, pretty from the Houston area, bigger bodies. Both were listed at 6'3", 255. And, you know, if you're playing a 4-3 scheme, you're probably saying, okay, those guys are, you know, strong side defensive end type guys. In our scheme, you know, I could see those guys playing a variety of positions. I could see Dotson at you know, the three technique where we've seen, you know, Rod Young this year, you know, especially if he keeps growing. I could see him at the five technique, you know, where Ladarius Hamilton's been, and, you know, Walker, I could see him at the five technique. I could also see him maybe being playing the jack position and rushing the passer. And I mentioned this back when we signed Josh Wheeler, we announced him as a defensive line signee, but technically he was an outside linebacker playing the jack. So it's just kind of, it's not, like I said, it's not the traditional 4-3. So you might see, you know, for example, David So, when we got his commitment, I thought that he might be kind of like a JUCO missing piece kind of guy. And typically you don't sign JUCOs, especially JUCOs only have 2 years left of eligibility. You don't typically sign them for depth, especially when we had a pretty full class at the time. You typically sign those guys to get them to play right away. And looking at the scheme, you know, if he's playing behind, you know, if he's playing on the line, he's probably playing behind Ladarius Hamilton. But if he's playing the jack, he's competing with kind of a host of guys who kind of just kind of got equal, somewhat equal playing time. You had Jamie King and Joseph Azogu at jack this season. And, you know, I couldn't help but wonder maybe if so, the guy who they want to see there rushing the passer at outside linebacker, you know, playing that edge defender, that jack, and maybe giving our defense something that it didn't necessarily have, especially with EJ Ajia leaving, who is our leading sack guy, might, you know, give us another pass rushing option from the outside. If, you know, I don't know what King and Zogu's stats off the top of my head were. But, you know, with Jack, you typically want that guy leading the team in sacks. So they might want more production at that position. Or he might be, yeah, he might just be a depth guy behind Hamilton. He was a highly recruited guy at Oklahoma State offer, and I think five other FBS offers. So he's a guy who's newer to the game of football. I think he didn't start playing until his senior year of high school. So, you know, he's just, all three of those guys have pretty solid size and speed combination. So, you know, I think, like I said, I think Walker and Dotson, you'll probably see them redshirt, see how their body develops naturally, and then see where depth chart wise, where you want them to fit in and, you know, what positions you want them to learn and play. And then Sal, like I said, he's a guy who could potentially help you right away. He's a JUCO guy, so that's probably what you signed him for. So he's one of those guys I would keep an eye on this season to see, you know, can he crack the two deep? I think he will be here for spring. I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, if he's here in the spring, you know, you'll definitely get a chance to get a look at him early. Then at linebacker, so I like to say, you know, second level linebacker, guys who are projected to play the, you know, the MLB or the WLB in our scheme, guys who are, you know, not edge defender linebackers. You signed four guys in the Murphy twins are the headliners. And then you also signed Kevin Wood out of Converse Judson, 6 foot, 205 pounds. So not a big linebacker. And then, Taylor Jacobs from South Grand Prairie, 6'2", 215. So he is a linebacker with a little bit more size. You know, I was surprised to see this many high school linebackers sign, especially because you signed, you know, two last year as well, last year. You signed last year, they had Katie Davis, Jordan Hunton, and trying to think of the other one, Larry Nixon. So yeah, You've got, you know, seven linebackers for basically two positions that you've signed in the last two classes. So that makes me wonder if maybe some of these guys are going to be, maybe potentially grow into the Jack position. Yeah, I'm not really sure. But like I said, the Murphy twins, probably out of any freshman in this class, they probably have the best chance to not just play within the 4-game perimeter to maintain the redshirt, but they have the best chance to actually earn a starting spot and play significant snaps this season. Especially, you know, at the WLB position, taking over for Aegea. They're very fast. They're guys who can rush the passer, guys who can play in coverage. They're pretty polished linebackers for coming out of high school. So yeah, I think the Murphy twins are two guys to really keep an eye out for. And then the other two linebackers are not slouches themselves either. Kevin Wood out of Converse Judson. He fits that mold that it seems like they want at that, that middle linebacker position that Garner played and that Katie Davis was listed in the two deep this year. He was another smaller guy, pretty highly touted signee out of Ennis last year. Yeah, Kevin Wood seems to kind of fit the same mold of, you know, smaller, faster linebacker who can hit in the open field. And you know, I think Wood got experience. Like a lot of these guys, Wood got experience playing for a really top-notch high school program in Converse Judson, which is traditionally one of the best in the state. And, you know, I think he's going to be a guy who maybe he doesn't necessarily play right away. He might have a chance, with Garner gone. But, you know, we'll see. Like I said, there's Katie Davis, who's in the class ahead of him. I think Katie Davis is a redshirt freshman who has a chance to win a starting job this year. Kevin Wood might have a chance to push there as well. And then Taylor Jacobs is a big linebacker. And I kind of wonder where he fits, especially with the Murphy twins. I think we see probably with the Murphy twins, if they pan out the way it looks like they should, you probably see where they fall and then, you know, maybe see where Jacobs falls in line after that. Does he outgrow the position and maybe become a potential Jack candidate? Does he, are you able to stick him at weak side linebacker? Is he able to maybe even outplay the Murphy twins? You know, you don't know that until they actually get on campus. He's a guy who had a Texas Tech offer himself, so it's not like he's, you know, just some kind of also ran signee who we got at the end. So, you know, that'll be really interesting to see, because like I said, there's really two second level linebacker spots in this scheme, you know, three if you think about the nickel position, but I think these guys are more, seem like they're signed more to play that second level MLB or WLB position. So like I said, a lot of guys, a lot of competition to kind of shake out between now and when the season starts next year.
And I think that's good. I mean, one thing that we've complained about the last couple seasons is that we didn't really have too much depth behind them. And I think Ike Aegea mentioned this himself at Conference USA Media Days. We asked him, he was like, yeah, last couple seasons, it's great to have all these guys kind of push us and being able to spell and play it, because he said last year, meaning, two seasons ago, they were getting tired and they felt like that, you know, they just didn't have enough to finish some games. They're a better defense this season. Was it only because they had, you know, more depth? Was it because, you know, these guys, Aegea and Garner particularly, kind of stepped up and elevated their games? It's kind of all of that, right? And maybe they're able to elevate their games because they had, you know, some good competition behind them. Aegea has led the team in sacks two seasons. He played a little bit of Jack linebacker a season ago, and then last year he played more of the, you know, weak side linebacker. So everything that you're saying about these guys moving around, playing different positions, I think that's going to be true. We're probably not going to see, you know, well, you're only going to be a weak side linebacker, the, you know, whatever. You're going to see guys playing different spots, and that's good. You know, it brings some unpredictability to the defense. As long as they know what they're doing, then, you know, you can confuse the offense. Just a note about Kevin Wood. He went, like you said, he went to Judson. Two guys from that Judson squad went to or signed with UTSA, and one guy signed with Texas A&M. So he'll be able to play all his old former teammates in the next two seasons, right? I think North Texas travels to A&M in 2020. So let's move on to defensive backs. I just a note about everything that you said. I like all these guys. Obviously, this is, you know, a lot of talent coming in. And I think it's good. It's going to push some of the talent we got last couple of seasons and challenge them. I think I'd like to see like a nose tackle, just because we're losing TJ, and I don't know what's happening with Bryce English. I'd like to see another nose tackle, but I think maybe they're going to probably convert a guy. We'll see.
Well, yeah, I think they did have one committed for a while in DeMeco Rowland, but for whatever reason, he didn't sign.
Yeah, I mean, and that's always tough. Like, finding everybody wants a big, giant nose tackle that can, move mountains in there. And so that's 130 teams that are looking for a guy that can do that. And everybody wants two of them, three of them, something like that. So, I don't think you need an NFL caliber guy for Conference USA, but it sure helps. All right, so defensive backs: Gaddy, Murray, Morris, LeAndre Davis, Quinn Whitlock. I think you liked Quinn Whitlock a lot, and you liked Gaddy also.
Yeah, I mean, Whitlock has kind of limited film. I like his potential to play early because I think they, for a while there, they didn't actually go after any JUCO defensive backs, even though they were losing both their starters. So I think he's a guy who has a good chance to play early. Maybe, I'm not sure if he's, I wouldn't necessarily call him a top-end prospect, but I think the staff identified him as a guy who can come in and play right away and still has 3 years of eligibility, so which is what EJ Ejiagua had, which is very, for a JUCO is very big because a lot of times that first year for a JUCO, you're kind of learning how to play at this level. It's not that much different from a true freshman kind of playing. It's just a little bit older, a little bit more mature maybe physically. But I think Whitlock could be a guy who you see him play some this year, then you really see him hit his stride his junior and senior year. That being said, I really like out of this class, I think the freshmen in this class are right up there with the receivers as far as just being just an amazing G5 position group as far as signees. So I would say, Gaddy and Murray are the two headliners here. And those guys, again, we talk about projecting positions. I talked to Adam. I was like, I feel like fans don't get a good read on where guys are going to play in our scheme because they just see where the recruiting sites have that player listed, what position, and it's usually where would that guy play in a 4-3, and we don't play a 4-3. So,
Right.
when I kind of went into this like this recruiting post and this podcast, I really wanted to kind of see like mention where they would fit, what that scheme, what's required of that scheme, what body type fits that scheme. And one of the things is that one of the things I noticed is that there's a lot of there are a lot of guys who could project multiple positions in the scheme. Gaddy and Murray are two guys who really fit that, and it's just because they're so talented. They could play. I could see either of them playing safety or cornerback. Gaddy at 6 foot, 180. He's a taller, longer guy. He's kind of built like Nate Brooks is, but I would say maybe he's kind of built more like Nate Brooks is now. So maybe as he gets older, he fills out a little bit more, but he's a guy who really likes to hit, and he's not a super big frame. So it's kind of interesting to see a guy who's not, a tall, kind of a taller, lankier guy who really likes to hit, not this, big, burling, 5'11" safety out there. But athletically, Gaddy might be the most impressive overall just athlete in this class. Maybe not necessarily the fastest, but from a fluidity standpoint, from ability to open up, I think he does end up at cornerback. And I think he's a guy who, like I said, along with the Murphy twins, probably has the best shot at playing right away. Aside from the JUCO guys, just looking at the freshmen. And then, Jevin Murray, who I also mentioned, he was a very good outside cornerback for Pearland Shadow Creek this year. There was some talk I saw yesterday on the Gomen Green board about how well he was playing, and it was true. The cornerback on the opposite side of Jevin Murray is a junior who's getting some big time P5 offers. I think he has like LSU and Oklahoma State, among others. The other cornerback for Shadow Creek, and
yeah.
Highland Park wanted to throw at him, not at Murray, which is pretty impressive and pretty encouraging to see as a UNT fan. They they looked at that defense and said, you know, we don't want really anything to do with Jevin, with throwing the ball at Jevin Murray. And the other option was not necessarily a, you know, a scrub. It was a dude who's, you know, really touted recruit himself, but they chose to throw at him instead. And Jevin Murray, you know, had a great game. 24/7 lists him as a safety, and I think he could play safety at North Texas. He's a guy who covers a lot of ground and covers a lot of ground quick, and he's also a guy who we could see starting at cornerback this year. I mean, he had I think 12 or 13 other FBS offers, which he had more than anyone else in our entire class, and really more than anyone we've signed in a while. I mean, he was a legit prospect, and I think talent-wise, he's going to be able to come in and I think they're going to be able to find a spot for him to play pretty soon. They also signed Dorian Morris, who he was a pretty good-looking prospect himself. You know, this class had so many good signees where you just think, you know, in most classes, this guy is like one of our headliners, but, you know, this year he's kind of taking a backseat to some of these other top guys. Dorian Morris is a track guy from Mesquite Poteet, and he's also a guy I could maybe see playing early on kind of at nickel, kind of like what Jameel Moore did in passing downs and kind of working his way up to more of a starting cornerback role, because he's so quick. I could see him, you know, being able to cover guys inside and being able to cover slots when we need more corners on the field. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, this is just a really good defensive back group, and I see a lot of chance for these guys to play early, but definitely a lot of potential down the line for these guys.
I think, I like all the versatility. I think what one thing that happens in modern college football is that they put guys in binds, right? You know, they want you to be predictable, and the way to counter a lot of that is to be versatile, right? So you want your safeties to be able to cover. You want your linebackers to be able to run and cover in space. And, you know, you want your defensive linemen to stop the run. You also want them to get to the quarterback. So, you know, the through line from all these guys that you described is like they're talented, they can play football, and they can do a lot of things. And I think that's the reason to be excited about this class. It's more – you don't really want situational subbing, you know, too much, because, you know, as you see, when teams go up tempo, you can't really do anything about it. And like, as much as I like Tyreek Davis, who's been good in his time, a couple teams picked on him, including UTSA and Old Dominion when they were driving late in the game. We had him on the field, and then they were picking on him because, you know, they were like, Keemon Hall over here, Nate Brooks over there. Let's go at this guy and see if he can cover. And I mean, you know, he, for the most part, he can do his job. But, you know, I think Old Dominion stuck their best receiver on him, right? And that's not a thing you want. And then UTSA did something similar. They put their best receiver, at least the guy that's playing the best. The guy had like 200 yards receiving. They stuck him on Tyreek Davis. So if we can get a guy like Jevin Murray and he's in that situation and we feel like he can cover those things, those guys, then I think we're just a better defense overall, right? So, yeah.
And I forgot to mention Leandre Davis as well. He is a high school running back from Rosenberg Terry, which is where Keyshawn McClain played. And, you know, McClain was a high school quarterback who we converted to safety. You know, Leandre Davis is a high school running back who I think we're going to see at that, you know, at that nickel position, kind of maybe taking over for Tyreek Davis down the line. And like you said, the reason you kind of want those guys to be able to be kind of sure tacklers and guys who can kind of almost serve as a third linebacker, but at the same time, be at least proficient in coverage. So, you know, Davis, again, maybe not the most highly touted guy in this class. He's a guy who has a chance to kind of play at that position. And if he can do both well, then you've got a good chance to play, you know, maybe not early, but, you know, down the line. Because like you said, subbing may not necessarily be the best thing, especially as teams go up tempo. And if he can do both, then you've got a guy who can be very valuable to this team.
So I'm excited. You know, we're obviously not going to see a lot of these guys, you know, this next upcoming season, at least not, and definitely not at their best selves. But, you know, 2-3 seasons down the line, this class, I think the fruits of this class will start, you know, being born, and we'll realize those. And I'm excited. I'm mostly excited about this class because I think that, you know, there's been a couple guys that seem like two stars, and all the things that everybody said about that Seth Rochelle said. Like, it's not necessarily about the stars. We like to, you know, we evaluate them as football players and we get them in here and they do good things. I think for the most part, they've had good success doing that. I mean, yes, Mason Fine is a large part of that. But I think we can see that Cason Martin can play a little bit, that Jason Bean is exciting, that, you know, some of these other quarterbacks that they're choosing, you know, can play. And, you know, like, they've had success with Keemon Hall and Eric Jenkins, a couple of JUCO defensive backs. Cam Johnson looks good. I know he got picked down by Louisiana Tech, but he kind of had to step in a weird position. My point is that it seems like this staff can recruit and that they can evaluate and they can develop these players. And that's good. That's great. It's exactly what they need to do, right? That's what we should be judging them on. So I think, you know, now we're at a higher starting point, you know, like these other guys are underrated, maybe undersized. These guys, a lot of teams think that they're good, and I think that means even better things, right, for the future. And who knows whether the staff will be around for that future. I mean, already Tashard Choice took a job at Georgia Tech. We'll see. We'll see. I'm excited, though. This is be excited about the future day or week. And I think we all can be, especially considering that bowl game was awful. It was completely terrible.
Yeah, it was not fun to watch.
You have any hot sports opinions about that bowl game?
No, I mean, I was pretty, every excuse I feel like we have, I feel like they had too.
Yeah.
Say for maybe Elevation that they might've been a little bit more used to it, but I feel like this team, even when it looked like Latrell was ready to leave, it seemed like this kind of administration and this team was just ready to kind of shift focus to the off season. And maybe that's not fair. I'm not there. I don't know if that's truly the case or not, but you know, when you think about everything that was going on, and you know, the fact that they took an early bowl game, they obviously had the Kansas State Latrell saga going on. It just seemed like a team that was kind of almost had its mind elsewhere, and maybe not even necessarily the players themselves, but kind of the guys above them. So yeah, I was disappointed because I don't, you know, Utah State was probably a team that should have beat us, but obviously should not have been to that degree. And with Fine out, I thought that this team got really exploited. And I've kind of mentioned that I don't think this team has really been necessarily that great this last couple of years from a roster standpoint. I think we've seen Mason Fine, an exceptional quarterback, take a, you know, 5-7 win roster with an average quarterback to 9 wins. And, you know, I think, like I said, with this recruiting class, that this has a chance to kind of give the program the base that it really needs. Whereas these guys before, you know, they were good enough to kind of get the job done and make us competitive. But, you know, for example, if you gave, you know, Mason Fine the similar recruiting classes around him and after him, you probably would have been looking at a more talented roster and a roster that maybe could have kind of done what we were hoping that they would do, you know, when we were 4-0 and had, you know, delusions of grandeur ahead of us.
I agree with you. I do think that I've been saying about the team for a long time, like, I like them, and I don't think that you need very much to be the best team in the conference. But I've always feared UAB just because I thought they had the kind of roster that could beat up on North Texas. And then, like, Louisiana Tech, because they have so much depth, they have talent on both sides of the ball. Those are the teams that I feared, and we lost to both of them. And I was a little scared of Old Dominion because I thought this was going to be the kind of season that they were going to jump up. I mean, I think in this league, you just need a little bit of depth, right, to cover for injuries because injuries happen, and you need a good quarterback, right? Or if you don't have a good quarterback, right, then a great offensive line, offensive defensive line. And we struggled with that, right? Troy, SMU last season, UTSA, and then FAU. Those teams that gave us trouble, they were like, man, they're kicking our ass. Well, they all had really good defensive lines, right? And this season, UAB, Louisiana Tech, really good defensive lines. And, you know, like, I mean, I've not been surprised at any of those kinds of things anytime it's happened. I'm like, there it is.
Yeah, and even that Arkansas game, you know, I've seen some people talking about, oh, if we beat Arkansas, we should be able to beat these teams. And we didn't move the ball against Arkansas. They were batting Mason Fine's passes down. We only had, like, less than 400 yards against them. So, you know, even Arkansas, while not a good team at all, in a team that we destroyed, you know, like you said, when you got a good defensive line in there, we did struggle to move the ball.
Yeah, and yeah, I think you need the rest of the roster to step up. You need a better offensive line play, and then you need like this season. It was a defense stepping up, right? It was not just like, well, let's rely on the offense and see what happens. One reason we beat Arkansas is because the defense was really good, and Arkansas had a terrible quarterback. Like, you know, they had four guys in there, threw an interception or something like that. So
yeah,
it is a team game. And I mean, you look at UAB, why'd they win? Cause their defense was amazing and their run game was powerful and nearly unstoppable. Our offense wasn't as good as it could have been. I think we were, you know, we had like three things, and once team stopped those three things, we try to do a different combination of those things, but we're not really great at anything else. That was the thing from the very first game against SMU to the very last game against Utah State, is that once you...
Yeah, we didn't run the ball well against SMU, and they hit Mason Fine a lot.
Yeah. That's always... Mason Fine is... I tell it sound like, once Mason Fine gets injured, we're going to struggle a lot offensively. And I liked Quinn Chambord. He's a great guy. You know, everybody wants to be his friend, and that's great. And I think, yeah, I agree. But I don't think that we're the same team with him running the offense as we are with Mason Fine. And I think that showed. And that's it. Yeah, I agree. Good hot sports opinions at the end of this podcast. Hey, thanks again, Billy, for joining the show, for waking up early and talking recruiting classes with me for, was it an hour and a half? Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
If you want...
too much. My bad, guys. No. Hope you've listened this far. If you are, I commend you.
Yeah, the people that are going to listen to recruiting podcasts are the people that are going to listen for 2 hours. It's fine. They can break it up. It's fine. It's a podcast. It's not like it's a live broadcast. ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get in touch with the show, if you want to send anything to Billy, you can just email podcast@meangreennation.com. I'll forward it on to him. And if you have any suggestions or anything like that, again, podcast@meangreennation.com. You can tweet at me at Mean Green Nation. You can find Billy on Twitter. Billy, what's your Twitter account again?
Billy Sierra 16.
There you go. He's a Titans fan, so don't hold that against him. Just be prepared.
Be ready for some sad Marcus Mariota tweets.
Yeah, and I mean, there's that, and then he's always talking mess about the NFC East. You know, like, I almost didn't invite him on the show. I was like, this guy. you're like the Lewin guy that was. What did he do? He did the celebration to.
Taylor Lewan.
Yeah.
He was mad that Josh Norman, he thought Josh Norman was trying to hurt Derrick Henry at the end when the Titans were running out the clock. Yeah. He's one of those misunderstood bad guys, you know, at least from my standpoint. From my Homer standpoint.
Yeah, yeah. What was I gonna say? Why is Derrick Henry all of a sudden good? You know? Wasn't it like a,
that's
it's just ridiculous. Nobody can stop him anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. They were trying to trade him at the trade deadline, and ever since then, he's been really good. He didn't really start getting a lot of opportunities until the last three games. But, I mean, he's a pretty special talent. He just kind of finally got going. I mean, last year, he had like 156 rushing yards in a playoff game. So he's done it before, just not consistently, and he's finally doing that. Yeah, I don't know. I was not expecting that. But, I was hoping that he would start doing better, and he definitely is.
I guess every season they should just threaten to trade him and then
watch him dominate. Yeah, actually, that's probably a pretty good idea.
All right, that's enough Titans talk on this show. I think we reached our limit for the next 2 years. all right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the show. Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.